You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. We had four games in the NBA today, and they were all game four. And in each of those contests, we saw the team that was trailing in that series come out with a victory. So now we have three series from today tied at two, and one was still a 3-1 lead for the Warriors. But we'll get to that game in a minute. Let's begin with the Cavs and Pacers. And as expected, LeBron came out with a very different intensity to how he finished in Game 3. J.R. Smith delivered an early dagger from three-quarter court at the end of the first. You know what, say what you will about Smith, but at least he's willing to put that shot up. Far too often, even in the playoffs, we see players not even attempt these because it affects their percentages. And what's even worse is many times they'll even take an extra dribble or two and then put up the shot after the buzz is gone, just as if to say, oh, well, we wanted to put up the shot, but we just lost track of time, guys. But what professionals, huh, that they refuse to put up a shot in that situation usually because it will affect their percentage. But kudos to J.R. Smith, and that was a hell of a shot because he went off one leg drifting to his left, and it's hard enough to make that from 20 feet, let alone from 70 feet. So that was incredible. Now, what wasn't incredible was during the broadcast when the Cavs were on a run in the second quarter, Marv Albert made an effort to point out that in this game, LeBron does have help. What the... well, are you kidding? All the Cavs played shocking in the second half of Game 3. And that includes the one that is apparently beyond reproach, and that's LeBron. I have never seen somebody pushed harder by the media to not be criticized. It's borderline propaganda and brainwashing. I know that must sound funny because we're talking about something as insignificant as a basketball game, but it really is borderline propaganda and brainwashing, and it's disgusting and insulting to the fan base. And when you're speaking about insulting, the inconsistencies in officiating early on was predictably one-sided. Every single 50-50 call was going Cleveland's way, and we were privileged to very little replay showing how bad some of these calls were. I wonder why that is. Do we have any thoughts on this? It couldn't be because the league wants the Cleveland Cavaliers, in the playoffs as long as possible, right? No, of course not. Carry on. And before you think this is a crazy conspiracy, why is this so predictable? And worse still, why are the non-biased fans, not surprised by this? Because the league has a history of this, and it's done so blatantly. And this is a topic that I've touched on in the past, so I'll move on now. But if you want to check it out, go to the archives on I Still Love This Game and look at the problems with NBA officiating and the episode on that. And you'll get my true thoughts on how they actually do it in terms of having vague rules so it's open to interpretation, so they can create inconsistencies down to interpretation, and that's the way they're able to get through it. But it's absolute nonsense and BS. But getting back to the game, Clarkson was very aggressive and played well in the second quarter. But almost in a carbon copy of Game 3, where the Cavs went into halftime with a double-digit lead, they came out completely unprepared for the increased intensity of the Pacers in the second half. Miles Turner led the run, and Collison was aggressive once Cleveland would double the ball handler in screening situations. One basic skip pass to Collison, and he has room to operate and get to the rim. Jose Calderon, who actually got the start with George Hill being injured, answered a surge by Bogdanović with a huge three, and then a great fake which set up Korver for a tray. This was critical down the stretch as well because it got Korver into a rhythm. But outside of that mini stretch from Bogdanović, Indiana couldn't make a three, and that continued all the way through to the end of the game. Cleveland only managed 20 in that quarter, and outside of walking the ball up the court, what exactly did LeBron do in the third? This is a serious question. Did he do... I can't think of anything productive he did in that quarter. Jeff Green started to emerge early in the fourth and was critical in the Cavs staying right with the Pacers. And for all that talk about LeBron being a quote-unquote smart player, this is the exact same defense that the Pacers threw at him in the second half of Game 3, and it almost had identical results. Kyle Korver was absolutely massive down the stretch with back-to-back threes, and I don't know how big of an impact that Jose Calderon ball fake and then passing, dishing it off to Korver for a wide open three was in getting him into a rhythm, which he obviously carried over to the fourth quarter. but it was causing the Pacers' defense to collapse even when he was navigating screens. So he didn't even have the ball half the time, and they were collapsing on him, which opened up the court for James, and he was able to get to the rim pretty much uncontested. The Pacers fell apart offensively. They were up 93-90 late, but found themselves down 101-95. Sorry, my notes during the game are pretty messy as I'm reading this. Oladipo had a bad shooting game for the third straight contest, and with Cleveland taking back the home court advantage, rectifying that is essential for the Pacers. Unless if they get another game like Bogdanović had in Game 3, they can't expect to win another game unless if Oladipo gets back on track. The one positive you can take from this game if you're the Indiana Pacers is if they get a remotely fairly officiated contest, they know that they can compete with the Cavaliers even with Oladipo struggling. Now, whether they get that or not is to be determined, and it's really out of their hands, and that's why fans get frustrated at this. We want to see the best basketball players and the best teams win, not whoever the referees slightly favor and manipulate the outcome of. And it's not just the referee's fault. I've got no doubt in my mind that this comes from the top down. They get instructions on how to officiate certain players and certain teams in certain situations, and it's not consistent. Now, if you are the Pacers, the one thing I would like to see is a little bit better minute management of the guys that are guarding LeBron. Because just like in Game 3, they're extending so much energy and denying him the ball and playing physical with him in the post that I think it affected them down the stretch. And that's why they couldn't get a basket down the stretch. They couldn't make anything. But beyond that, this series still has a lot of fireworks left in it. So just buckle up and get ready for an exciting at least two more games of a pretty competitive series. And speaking of series that have a lot of fireworks left in them, let's stay in the Eastern Conference and check out the Wizards and Raptors. Look, the Raptors came out very strong and sensed the importance of this game, not just in relation to this series, but I think in also getting some confidence and momentum heading into a long playoff run, which is what their expectations are. Washington looked lost in the first half, and if the Wizards were to be blown out, then questions were about whether this team can compete in the Eastern Conference moving forward, especially the emergence of Philly and Boston, that they had to be asked. Bradley Beal and Kelly Oubre changed the momentum of the game and the series. DeRozan was clutch in trying to hold off the surging Wizards, but Toronto fell apart even after Beal fouled out of the game. John Wall was fantastic down the stretch with Beal out, but the Wizards' perimeter defense was critical as Toronto couldn't get anything going offensively. Now, if you're Toronto, even though the series is 2-2, I wouldn't panic. Washington has loads of veterans, and they're incredibly talented. This should be at least a second-round series if we're just looking at the rosters, and they're definitely not a typical 8 seed in the East. And while Toronto doesn't need to panic, they have to be aware of the importance of Game 5. Anything less than a must-win mentality could be a disaster for them. The biggest thing they need to do to correct this loss is to get back to playing with poise on offense. They got themselves out of rhythm when the Wizards made their run. They should, despite losing this game, take confidence in the fact that they had this game in hand, and they will probably feel they gave it away. Now, if they genuinely feel that they gave it away, they need to back this up and take control of this series in Game 5. Now, if you're Washington, all the momentum is theirs, but they are also dealing with underperforming in Toronto themselves. They really need to prepare for the Raptors forcing Potter and Oubre to make plays instead of Wall and Beal. If those guys, Potter and Oubre of course, deliver, the Raptors may implode again. How the rest of this series plays out will determine the direction of both these franchises. Because this may be, even for Washington as an 8 seed, this might be their last chance of making some real noise and making the conference finals. And the same with Toronto. So the desperation levels should be at an absolute premium for both teams. And speaking of desperation, let's go over to the Spurs and Warriors Game 4. This was a gutsy win for the Spurs. Even though they played in Game 3, they were probably still in shock of the passing of Aaron Popovich. And their focus probably wasn't there. It was there today, however, especially on offense. This was LaMarcus Aldridge's best game since his back-to-back 40-point performances against the Rockets in the 2014 playoffs. Manu also turned back the clock, and the rest of the Spurs followed their lead. For the first time in his career, Rudy Gay had an impact in a playoff game, and he has to produce on both ends like he did today if they are to have any chance of forcing a Game 6. And there's no way that the Spurs can expect Manu to play that well in Game 5. So the question is now, who steps up for San Antonio? Maybe it's Danny Green, maybe it's Parker. If they get contributions from them along with Aldridge and Gay, then I guess they do have a chance, but they still have to deal with Durant. What are the odds that he goes 12 of 28 again from the field? Also, what are the odds that Klay Thompson goes 4 of 16? Combined, they were both 6 of 19 from 3. You'd have to expect they'd shoot better at home, right? If they don't, I like the Spurs' chances in extending the series. And honestly, those are words I didn't expect to say in this series. And the final game I want to talk about is the Celtics versus the Bucks. Now, I'll be honest with you guys, this game was on at 3 in the morning. I only caught the second half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter. So I'll talk about what I saw, and I'll catch the rest of the game later on today, and then if there's anything significant that happened in those first 2.5 quarters, I'll talk about it in tomorrow's podcast. But what I did saw was the Bucks again having a big lead, and the Celtics, man, when they get going, they're a tough team to beat, and this is what's scary if you're any opposition for them, is they find themselves in holes, but they get themselves out of those holes. And they absolutely have the next man up mentality, where it doesn't matter who's injured or who's struggling, whoever comes in off the bench has the ability to produce. Now, Milwaukee also did stand up down the stretch as well. As one, people talk about the momentum and coming and what it takes to come back, from behind in the NBA, especially in the playoffs. But what they don't talk about is the mental toughness that you have to have. If you've given up a lead and the game is close down the stretch, to withstand the, oh, how are we even in this situation kind of mindset. So we should give the Bucks a lot of credit for withstanding that run by Boston. They could have rolled over and it could be a 3-1 series right now, and it'd be pretty much curtains, right, if you're the Bucks, if you go down 3-1 and you have to win 2 games in Boston. So before I actually talk about what I saw in the last few minutes, I did want to say something about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And how they have emerged. I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, but the Irving injury and the Hayward injury may be the absolute best thing that ever happened to this franchise. Obviously not for this season. Now, if you're only talking about one season and you want to win a championship, you need those guys, right? But going forward, this is a young team with a young nucleus, right? Take away Al Horford and Morris. This is a very, very young team. Because Kyrie Irving's only 25 or 26. I mean, he's by no means, he's not even close to 30, let alone towards the end of his career. So you still got him for at least 7-8 years, unless if they bring LeBron James in, then you probably got him for 7 or 8 weeks. Now, I couldn't resist that. But what I was going to say about this team is now, because of those injuries to Irving and Hayward, we have now seen Tatum and Brown really grow up in front of our eyes, and I don't think they would have had this level of pressure, this kind of experience, even if they were playing alongside Irving and Hayward, even if they made it to the finals, the pressure wouldn't be on them to produce. So they're growing up, they're maturing, and they're developing at a much higher rate. So the next few years, when I'm not sure if Hayward's going to be around for like 3 or 4 years. We know Irving is going to be there for 3 or 4 years, as I said, barring any catastrophes in management. So what we're going to see is a real genuine development of a young team, and they're going to be rivaling Philly, barring their concerns with injuries, for supremacy in the Eastern Conference. It should be incredible to watch, because both those teams, they're capable, maybe not Boston now without Irving, but if Irving was around, both those teams are capable of not just winning the Eastern Conference, but the NBA championship. I really believe that. And I think a lot of people are starting to come around on Philly as well. I think they're a genuine chance to win the title, even if they line up against Houston or Golden State. And if both those teams are healthy, well, guess what? They have a lot to deal with a very balanced and very deep Philadelphia team. And the reason I'm bringing this up is down the stretch, both those guys delivered big time in big pressure situations. Now, I don't know which one's going to be the more dominant player, which one's going to be the more versatile player, or does it even matter? Just get a jersey and run some on their backs and you just give them minutes. They'll figure it out. You have a pretty good coach in Brad Stevens who work out their skill sets, and you know they'll fit into each other. They just got to keep them. These guys should be considered virtually untradeable because we don't know what their ceiling is. But down the stretch, they played big. They were massive down the stretch, and they're making guys like Morris look so much better than what we've seen in the past. Al Horford had a big opportunity to go for a 3-point play, and he missed the dunk, but he was massive once again. But the play of Giannis, and I haven't even mentioned him so far, he's starting to develop some serious leadership qualities as well. And I'm excited to watch as long as they stop putting it on at 3 a.m, I'm excited to watch the rest of this series because this could go either way. This is the closest series I think we have right now in the NBA because if you ask me which team do I think wins, well, Boston has a home court. They play a lot better on their home court and they seem to mesh a lot better. They got far better coaching, but the best player in the series is Giannis and now his role players are starting to step up as well. So, I mean, it was incredible. The tip-in was great, but the three at the end of the game by Brogdon, I think it was, can't be understated as well. That was massive, and now the series is tied. So, once again, as I said about the Cavs and the Pacers, along with the Wizards and Raptors series, buckle up, because those series are on knife edges. All three of these series are on knife edges. And then all of a sudden, if you look at the Golden State San Antonio, if, you know, we see some of the San Antonio players step up a little bit and provide support to Aldridge, and Kevin Durant doesn't play all that well, and Klay Thompson, we've seen him get very hot in the playoffs, and we've also seen him get very cold in the playoffs prior, would it be out of the realms of possibility that that series goes, you know, 6 or 7 games? And then all of a sudden that becomes a knife edge situation. And then they've got to figure out that, okay, after that, even if we get through a long series, a potentially long series against the Spurs, they're going to have to deal with the Pelicans, who are so much more talented in terms of their players on the perimeter and their athleticism than what the Spurs are. If they had their hands full with the Spurs, granted they're playing inspired basketball as of this moment, but so is New Orleans for different reasons, obviously, but they're going to have their hands full. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Once again, there'll be a podcast tomorrow. There's only 2 games tomorrow. And I think I haven't checked, but I think it's Minnesota versus Houston. And I think Houston rights the ship and goes up 3-1. And the other one, I think, is Oklahoma and Utah. That will be great. I said before game 3 that the loser of game 3 will win game 4. So by that, and I'm not overly confident in saying this after seeing the way that game 4 ended, but I think Oklahoma will win game 4. I'm going to stick with that. And we have a tied series there as well. Because there's only 2 games tomorrow, I'll be answering a lot more questions. Please send them through. There is a backlog, but please send through playoff-specific questions because obviously it's a playoff, so they're relevant topics. You can do that via Facebook. Go to facebook.com/I Still Love This Game. You can do it via Instagram. So just search I Still Love This Game, all one word. Or you can email me, matt@istilllovethisgame.com. Or if you're watching it on YouTube, just leave a comment on there and I'll see it on there as well. Thank you very much for listening, guys. Enjoy the game. I hope you enjoyed the games today. And I hope you enjoy the games tomorrow. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you so much.